That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you have been listening to this program for basically more than a couple of days, you've probably heard me drop the number $51 trillion. And when I talk about $51 trillion, I talk about the amount of wealth that's effectively been stolen from all of us suckers, apparently, that earn roughly under $200,000, $250,000 a year, stolen by those that make well over $1 million a year. Well, did you know that many of our nation's wealthiest CEOs are making scads more than that? And again, recall that the $51 trillion, that is the amount stolen from us working folks, regular people in the middle class, from approximately 1981 to 2021. It's only gotten worse since then. And I am so happy to be joined for this next half hour by Sarah Anderson. She directs the Institute for Policy Studies and their Global Economy Project, and she co-edits the Institute's inequality.org website and their weekly newsletter. If you haven't yet checked this out, I think that you should. Super happy to have you with us, Sarah. You've just released your new and updated CEO pay analysis. Tell us a little bit about the top line, Sarah, and thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely. I'm really glad to be here. And yes, for the third year in a row, we zeroed in on the 100 largest U.S. corporations with the lowest worker pay. And we looked at their CEO pay and their median pay trends. And what we found is that at a time when so many Americans are concerned about covering the costs for groceries and housing, that the CEOs of these leading low-wage companies have really been focused on lining their own pockets instead of lifting up their workforce. Since 2019, average CEO pay at these 100 companies has increased at twice the rate as the increase for their median worker pay. And last year, the average gap between the CEOs and the typical workers at these companies was 632-1.
I was just going to ask you what that new updated ratio was, because I had looked at your report back from 2023 and it was still in the low 500s. In other words, the top 100 low wage company, their median worker pay to CEO ratio, and it's now in the 600s. Tell us, Sarah, what is a quote low wage company, and why should this particular statistic and your analysis be concerning for folks all across the income scale, at least if we've got a boss and earn a paycheck?
Absolutely. Well, the data that we use is what companies, publicly held companies, have to report to the SEC for their median worker pay. And for this group of 100 companies, most of them are around the 30-something thousand dollar range. In other words, half of the employees of these companies make less than that. And there are a lot of the household name companies you've heard of before. Starbucks really jumped out this year. They had by far the largest gap between CEO and worker pay. It was 6,666-1 because
So the CEO makes 6,000 times, or like, explain what that means to someone who might be considering getting a job at Starbucks. What's that number again?
Yeah, well, the CEO of Starbucks made about $95.8 million, whereas the median worker there made just $14,674. So the gap there between the CEO and the workers was about 6,666 to 1. I always have to say it slowly because it's such a mammoth number. One, another way we looked at it is a barista at Starbucks would have had to start pouring lattes around the time when human beings invented the wheel in order to make as much money as their CEO made last year.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
I've been around a number of CEOs in my career. I've been around a couple of billionaires in my career. And listen, I think we need to sort of break the news to folks. CEOs, the best of them, very, very helpful to a company. But to the tune of $90 million, that just it boggles the mind, Sarah. How did we get here? Because it wasn't always this way, was it?
No, that's right. Back in the 1960s, the gap between big company CEOs and their typical workers was more around the level of 25 to 1. And now the average for the S&P 500 is usually around 300 to 1. And that's not because these CEOs just got a whole lot smarter or, you know, better at their jobs. It's because their pay packages are stuffed with huge stock grants that can balloon for often for reasons that have nothing to do with what the CEO is actually doing. And there's often CEOs of other companies on their boards who don't have an interest in rocking the boat on CEO pay. They benefit from it as well. So it's an I scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of situation. And those are some of the things that have really led to ballooning CEO pay to the point where there's a lot of business school research now showing that this is not good for companies when you have these extreme gaps. It tends to undermine employee morale, which can boost turnover rates, which can add a lot of cost to a company. And frankly, it just doesn't bring out the best in your employees if they don't feel like they're part of a team that's contributing to the value of a company that's going to be shared more equitably. Everyone contributes to the value of a company. And when you feel like you're getting a fair reward for that, you tend to work harder and be more productive. And when you're sending a message that your employees are worth just such a tiny fraction of what the guy in the corner office is making, it's really not good for the bottom line.
I would have to think it also does something psychologically for the CEOs as well. There's just this. I don't know that I could ever feel like I'm part of a team if my CEO was making 9,000 times what I'm earning. It just, it seems so antithetical to sort of the esprit de guerre of a corporation, if you will. And again, I the value proposition is so mystifying to me. Again, back in the 60s, we were looking at a CEO to median worker pay ratio in the low to mid 20s. I doubt the value proposition. Sarah, can you explain to folks a little bit why these sorts of exorbitant pay packages, compensation packages, if you will, are also not good for entrepreneurship, innovation, small to medium sized businesses?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of research looking at, you know, what makes a really good, effective corporate model and what doesn't. And when you have this notion that one person is single-handedly almost responsible for the value of a company, it separates them from the many people who are involved at all stages of a company who have great knowledge about how things could be improved or do better, but they don't feel like they're part of the decision making. They don't feel like they're part of the process. And so it discourages people from contributing to improvements that could be made in a company when they're being rewarded at such a low level compared to those people who are, you know, up there on high at the top of the ladder.
I also think on a very fundamental level, if I am a startup company and I want to be able to compete with or enter the same market space as a very large corporation, oh my goodness, how am I going to recruit folks if the leadership packages are so exorbitant? It just, I think in another way, it also can tamp down
folks who are looking to innovate because, hey, if I'm going to go make whatever it was that the Starbucks made $90 million a year, why would I start my own coffee company when I can get paid that much? I digress, Sarah. What are some of the other companies that were really standouts in terms of this exorbitant disparity between, again, it's not just the CEO, it's going to be their entire leadership ranks, but the CEO is certainly a good proxy for looking at these incredible wage disparities.
Yeah. Well, let me look at Lowe's because that will get me into another part of the problem here, which is that these CEOs will often claim, oh, I only get paid for my performance because so much of my money that I'm getting from the company is in the, some form of stock-based pay. But they're increasingly using a scam to artificially inflate the value of that stock-based pay, and that is stock buybacks. Yes. So this is when they go out and they repurchase their shares on the open market. And when they do that, it artificially inflates the value. The most incompetent CEO could reap a huge payout just through stock buybacks. And on our list of low-wage companies, the number one stock buyback purchaser was Lowe's, the home improvement store. And just to put this into perspective, with the amount of money that Lowe's spent on stock buybacks over the past 6 years, they could have given every one of their 273,000 employees a $28,000 bonus every year for all of those 6 years. And that would have meant a lot to Lowe's workers because median pay there is about $30,000. So it would almost have doubled their pay. And meanwhile, of course, the CEO is getting, you know, more money than he can ever spend in his life. And it's in part because of this financial scam called stock buybacks. So I think that that is part of, you know, the problem. We do not have a pay for performance system for CEOs because they have a number of tricks they can play to inflate their paychecks, no matter how they're performing. And stock buybacks is one of the most wasteful examples of that.
Yeah, there was this moment in sort of B schools in the 80s where there was this great epiphany, right? Oh, we'll tie CEO pay to stock performance, especially for publicly traded companies. And then dot, 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 a little bit later on, the federal government decided to make stock buybacks legal, which weren't a thing for like 150 years in our country. Stock buybacks weren't a thing. And as Sarah has explained, folks, when a stock buyback occurs, the corporation itself is buying its own stock back. So it's giving away a boatload of cash, largely to the biggest shareholders, and they're giving that cash away to repurchase the company's own stock. By doing so, there's less stock on the market, and thus, by definition, lower supply equals higher price. It immediately juices the stock price. So not only is it a cash giveaway from the company instead of investing in, I don't know, worker pay or research and development or capital improvements, they're just juicing their own stock price and giving hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars away to their largest shareholders. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Sarah. We're going to talk about what we can do about this extraordinary problem that has only gotten worse with each passing year. Again, I am with Sarah Anderson. She directs the Institute for Policy Studies Global Economy Project. They just put out their CEO to worker pay study. Stick with us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.